Infinite Waters Radio. Diving deep, leaving no stone unturned, elevating the soul, exploring the mind, question everything. We are the future.
Greetings, family. Once again, we're diving deep into infinite waters. And as always, we have great guests, interesting guests who are really about expansion, questioning our reality. And we have a very, very special guest. He's no stranger to infinite waters. He's dived with us before. And to everyone who wants to check out the previous shows, just go into the archives and you can download the shows. And all the information is there. So the guest we have today, I'm sure many of you've heard of him before. We have Lennon Honor returning once again. And this show is entitled Deep in the Garden. This is Infinite Waters. I'm your host, Ralph Smart. So without further ado, Lennon, are you on the line?
Yes, I am, brother. And I am so happy to be with you once again. As I shared offline, things have come full circle for me. So we talk about that 360 degrees, and to be back with you today is a blessing indeed. And I want to thank you for all of the wonderful work that you're doing, and also for being such a gracious host to have me here.
Well, I definitely feel that your work has inspired me and a lot of other people. I just feel really and truly that it's just wonderful just to connect again, because when I was on Blog Talk Radio back in 2009, such a long time ago, I came across your work and I was blown away just to see so much creativity and just really epic work. So that you can come back again is great to take time out of your busy schedule. And for those that don't know who Lennon is, well, he's been here so many times and we're not going to do the full bio. Lennon is a husband, father, musician, video producer, lecturer, personal consultant, radio show host, and a writer. And he's done some great work, over 8 documentaries to date. And he has an ongoing series called The Borg Agenda. I'm sure many of you out there have seen it on YouTube and his website. And also, he has just released a very powerful book indeed, entitled Deep in the Garden of Consciousness. Now, I've had a chance to read this book, and I have to say, it's a great book, a book which really makes us question the nature of reality. It's a deep book, you know. Normally I dive deep into infinite waters, but really this book, I had to scratch my head a few times to say, wow, this is powerful, because I think there's so much information out there on the internet, but at the same time, there's a lot of distraction. And I feel when you have work like this, it's a real gem.
Oh, so thank you. Thank you for the kind words. It's interesting because in you mentioned when we question things in your intro, the intro music, you talk about, you know, when we, you know, to question things. And I have a saying that I'm actually, it's a quote that I'm going to be having in an upcoming book sometime next year. When you question everything, you will find your own truth. And that's what this book is about. It's about sharing what I have found through questioning the nature of this reality. And I share my truth with everyone inside of this book. So this is the perfect place to be to talk about this book. And I can't go on all radio shows to talk about this book, but I most definitely can come here and dive in infinite waters.
Wow. Well, I'm just humbled as well, because it's a powerful book and you really sent ripples, shockwaves in the world in terms of your own work, really inspiring people and making people question. I just want to ask you, what inspired you to write this book, Deep in the Garden of Consciousness?
Yeah, I would say that there's probably a lot of different experiences that have inspired me. A lot of people, different people have inspired me too. And I gave reference to some of those people inside of the book. Matter of fact, while we're on air, I guess I should give them some props here too. Of course, my wife, Aida, I have to just thank her here and now. She has been so supportive.
Better do that quickly.
Yes. I need to do that as soon as possible. And then all of my children, they have functioned as inspiration. And I'll get back to why that is the case. My flute teacher, James Newton, a friend of mine, Inga Ambrosia, Siddiqui Bakari, Sonia Barrett, who you are very familiar with. She has been a very inspirational and very supportive of me over the years. Taj Tariq Bey, Spirit Halima, and Dr. Phil Valentine. So those are some of the individuals whose work has inspired this book. But I have to go back to my children. And one of the things that I recognize is that my children, they will be adults someday. And the world that they will inherit, there will be challenges, just like there are challenges for us, you and I, Ralph, as we, you know, kind of engage this world as it is. And we do our best to send those ripples and try to create change. And we question things and we try to uplift and inspire. And for my children, I want them to inherit a world that is much more conducive to their spiritual growth here on the planet. And so this book, in part, the reasoning as to why I wrote this book is because I recognize that the human species, which includes my children, right, and in the future of the human species, is largely centered around the spiritual growth of the human species. At least it should be. And then the challenges tend to get in the way as distractions. When we talk about the evolution of the spiritual evolution of the species, there's so many different distractions. There's so many different people can say control networks and power structures, institutions that tend to discourage the spiritual growth of each and every one of us. And so I felt like this book would be a way for me to share my truth with people as on many different topics: consciousness, spirituality, the soul, the creation, existence, the origins of the human species, etc., so that I can at least have something there for my children, you know, other folk too, but for my children to read that can provide them with an expansion of possibility. And that expansion of possibility is what will enable them to have a life, a full life, that in which they can engage and really experience the spiritual quality and the spiritual makeup of their human existence. And so I would say that my children have been a very strong influence in me in terms of writing the book. And then, of course, I sincerely care about the human species and where it is headed. I'm seriously concerned about quite a few things. And I felt like if I could write this book and share my insights with the world through this book, then I would at least be able to touch a few people in such a way to where they can really lay claim to their power and recognize themselves as being a profoundly, powerfully gifted spiritual being that has the potential to transform the material makeup here on planet Earth, and in point of fact, have the power to really impact the nature, the spiritual nature of the planet itself. And in that sense, I had to write this book.
Well, that's great, really, because when I was reading the book, it made me really realize that you talk of at the age of 17, you had a major cosmic awakening. And this is something I've had, and I feel a lot of people I've spoken to, they have it. I call it the point of realization.
Yes.
And at that moment, everything they've ever believed really comes under questioning. And it's almost like a massive paradigm shift that happens.
Yes.
And just please talk about really how this experience changed your whole outlook on life.
Yes, yes. And in my childhood, I've had many different experiences that people would classify as being spiritual. In some cases, we would say otherworldly. We all have, especially when we're young, we have those experiences where we see certain things, or we may feel something, or you know, we may have a particular dream, but we can't really tell if it was real or if it was. And then when we wake up, we don't know if we've actually woken up or we're still dreaming. And so, you know, this it's kind of like this convergence of what we perceive to be the spiritual realm and this physical realm. We've all have had those experiences. And one of the things I pointed out in the book is that we actually exist in both of those realms and in other realms simultaneously. It's just that when we identify as being the human being, we tend to have that orientation. And so when we do have those spiritual experiences, we perceive them as being something external, when in point of fact, they're all internal. And I talk about that inside the book. So for me, I've had quite a few of those types of experiences throughout my life, especially as a child. But at the age of 17, and I was in college, my freshman year in college, and I'm not at home anymore, and you know, I'm trying to find my place, I'm trying to find new friends, I'm questioning certain things, I'm wondering where am I headed? I know I'm in college now, but what am I going to do? How am I going to get it done? So it was a very trying time in that sense, you know, trying to kind of find my way. And I was a music major, and my main instrument was the flute. And I would go and practice late at night in the practice rooms, which were fairly close to the dorms where I stayed. And one night, and I would always go late because during the day I was doing classes and then other things as well. And that night, that was the time where I would go to the practice rooms in the music department and actually practice. In the practice rooms, you have a key, you open up the door, you go inside, you shut the door, you lock the door, you practice for however long you want to. So any music student was given a key and they were allowed to go. So one night I went, and it was about 11 p.m., and it was dark. There was also a lot of fog during that time because it was during the fall quarter. And I head to the practice room. When I get to the practice room, there are two levels. One on the bottom level, there's a second story, and I walk up these stairs. And the stairs, there it's enclosed inside this. It's like a cement enclosure. I walk up these stairs, and I go up to the second floor. I go into the practice room. I take out my flute. I start practicing. But then at a certain point, I said, I want to come outside, and I'm going to practice inside the hallway, because the acoustics in the hallway were really, really awesome. It had an awesome echo effect there. And even as you walk through, you can actually hear your feet reverberating, your footsteps reverberating in the hall. So I wanted to go and see what it would sound like if I played the flute. So I got out there, and I was right in front of the first descending step. I took out my flute. I started to play. And because of the acoustics, everything that I played actually came back to me, right, because of the echo effect. And not only was I hearing the sounds, but at a certain point, I could hear the energy in the sound. So we're talking about vibration. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the deeper depths of music. Music is a very powerful. You know this to be the case. It's a very powerful force. You can literally create things with music. You can create moods. You can create emotions. You can actually create physical matter is based upon vibrations, and vibrations are different levels of vibration. Music and sound is in fact nothing more than vibrations. And then not only the vibrations, but also the intent of the vibrations. So what I was thinking in my mind also was being projected back towards me. And at a certain point, I lost track of time. I had transcended time and space. I don't know how long I was practicing, but I was so wrapped up in the music. Everything that I heard inside of my head and while I was playing, it was actually coming out. And then it was coming back to me at the same time. And I call it like a vibrational feedback loop. And at a certain point during this experience, and that in and of itself was quite profound, I felt like there was something that was watching me. And when I, you know, right when I felt it, it made me feel very uncomfortable, and to such a degree. And when I play, my eyes were closed. So I couldn't see what was in front of me, and I was just in that zone. But something, when I felt that feeling of something watching me, I had to open my eyes. And when I opened up my eyes, I saw there levitating towards the back of the stairway this entity. And it scared me to the core, because at the age of 17, I was not prepared for something like that, you know. And what was fascinating about what I saw levitating at the back end of the room was that it looked exactly like me. And it had a certain kind of a smirk or smile on its face that just struck even more fear inside of me. And I was so fearful. I almost dropped my flute. I remember I felt weak. I almost felt like I was going to fall over because it was just like incredible. And some of y'all know what I mean. Like you've had that experience and you in that moment, it's like your body becomes weak because it challenges your very existence, the nature of your reality. And sometimes that's hard for us to deal with, especially at the age of 17, right? So inevitably, I ran back into the practice room. I locked the door as if that was going to matter. And I sat down, and I was just so beyond – it was like beyond reason. There was no way that I can reason this or I couldn't think logically about this. I put my flute away, and I told myself that I was going to leave and run out the practice room. But before I was able to do that, I kept hearing this sound. It was like a deep breathing sound. And to this day, I don't know exactly what that was, but that deep breathing sound kind of kept me locked in there because I was so afraid to go out the door that I just kind of stayed in and I stayed in. At a certain point, that breathing sound stopped. And that was at that moment I said, okay, now I have my chance to actually get out of here and run back to the practice room. And when I go to the door and I'm about to open up the door, but I was so fearful that I couldn't do it. And at a certain point, I got enough courage and I opened up the door and I ran out. I ran back to the practice room and that was the end of that. Now, I didn't understand what that meant then. And it wasn't until more recently in my life where I kind of figured out exactly or at least my perspective spiritually of what took place. I talked to my teacher about it. I think it was a day or 2 days later. And he told me, he looked at me and when I told him I needed to talk with him, he was like, well, what is it? He thought it was something like really, really bad. Like I'd done something really wrong or something. And he was always like a father figure to me. I'd known him since I was like 15. And I told him what took place. And he said, it's just that you have finally arrived. And I didn't know what that meant at the age of 17. What does that mean? Right. and it wasn't until later on in my life, I realized what he was saying. It's just when we get to the point where we realize and we arrive at a place in our lives, we realize that we are all, each and every one of us, we're far more profound than what we have been taught. And what I saw levitating at the back end of that stairway was me, the spiritual me, if you will, the representation of my soul. Almost like a mirror reflecting back to me my essence, so that the seed would be planted at the age of 17 to put me on course to recognizing that I am and you are, and the listeners, each and every one of you, you are a profoundly spiritual being that has the capacity, literally, to manifest yourself at will. Okay, and it wasn't that I manifested myself in that moment at will. It was almost by accident. But the fact that I was able to do it even as an accident proves that we are some very powerful beings. And that is a story that I open up the book with. And I get into more detail in terms of that story. And I think that that's an appropriate foundation for the topic dealing with consciousness and dealing with the soul. And that story is probably the most important experience that I have had in terms of my own spiritual growth. And even to this day, when I think about the story, I still get that feeling that I got just a little bit of it. It's like this uneasy feeling because it still challenges nature of what I perceive to be real.
Well, a major theme that I got from reading the book was that it's all about remembering who we are as human beings. And I found that to be such a profound message because we have been dumbed down as a society. Anyone that... listens to Infinite Waters, we're always saying that we've really really been dumbed down to such a devolved state, and a lot of us are really just waking up slowly, but it's a long process. I just wanted to ask you, you say at the beginning of your book that the biological entity we call the human being is not exclusively a physical being. And, you know, you say that there are other components to us. And I also feel this. I just want to ask you, how do you feel that human beings on the earth developed a state of amnesia? How did we lose our memory?
Yeah, and I would say that there's at least two reasons to consider. And one is that there is a game that we play with ourselves.
Right.
Because it's not just external, it's also internal, this internal game. It's almost an internal agreement, an internal contract that we engage in. And that is that when we go into spiritual contract with the biological entity that we call the human being, when I say we go into spiritual contract, I mean that as a soul being, when we go into a spiritual contract to bestow spiritual consciousness onto a particular human being or a group of human beings, there is a part of that experience we're in, or that contract, where we cannot allow for the biological entity that we call the human being to know all of what we know as a soul being. Because in point of fact, that would be like, you know, taking a gallon of spiritual knowledge and pouring it into a cup. You know, one cup, you know, it would be way too much. In point of fact, if you put too much water inside the cup itself may crack. So that is part of it, that we can't allow. The biological entity that we call the human being must be allowed its appropriate time to grow in particular areas of its human existence, so that the information that is provided to it, or bestowed upon it, or poured down upon it, can resonate with the biological entity's current level of development. So in that sense, it's not that we forget. It's the biological entity does not have access, full access to the full breadth of our spiritual knowledge, because ultimately, as a soul, you already know, and I already know, and the listener already knows everything, right? The biological entity is not privy to that information. We bestow that information unto it. It's one of the most important topics in the book. Like, it's a matter of orientation, how we identify ourselves. If we identify ourselves exclusively as being a biological entity, then we will perceive ourselves to need to remember and need to have spiritual experiences. But if we recognize that in the first place we are a soul being, it becomes an issue of bestowing upon the biological entity, giving to the biological entity, guiding the biological entity through our spiritualization of the human species. So in that sense, that's part of it. That's one of the reasons as to why we can't remember. The other one is that the nature of existence here on planet Earth, there is so much manipulation. And I'll talk about this inside towards the end of the book, and there's so many different. I talk a lot about in terms of media and media mind control techniques and all these different types of things. And one of the things that happens is that as a child, because we have a level of purity, we're more connected. We tend to be more connected to our soul self. And that's why my 6-year-old or 7-year-old son, when he was six, he comes into the room, and my wife and I were sitting here and we're talking, and he comes in and he says, "Mommy, I know where babies come from." You know, I'm like, okay, well, now it's time to have that talk, right? And he says, when someone dies, and we've never even talked to him about death, right? When animals, like if when they play with different bugs and a bug dies, they always ask questions. Well, what happened to it? We say, well, it's no longer there in terms of it's the energy that's there. Like, it's no longer there. Oh, okay, you know, and they go about this. And he said, I know where babies come from. I was like, okay. And I'm thinking he wants to talk about sex and sexual intercourse, but that's not where he's coming from. He says, when someone dies, the electricity in their body leaves their body and goes into the mommy's belly so that the baby can be born. He was 6 years old. Wow. And see my wife and I, we don't impose our sense of spirituality on our children. And many parents do that. We don't do that. I don't tell my son, look, son, you know, there's a soul and you need to be this way and you have to do. We don't do that. Right. And they're not in the public education system. They're not engaging other children. They're not who are talking about spiritual concepts, anything like that. This goes to show you that in essence, when we come here, we're so connected to our soul self that we can access levels of information that many of us do not find until we're like 40, 45, 50 years old. Right. Now, what happens is, in terms of why, to get to the second part of your question, you know, so many of us, it takes us such a long time to kind of get back to that place where my son is already at. Myself included, I had to take a lot of time just to get back there. It's because there's so much manipulation that gets in the way from us being able to access, as a biological entity, the spiritual wisdom of our soul. See, that's really what it's about. The biological entity that we call the human being has what I call biospiritual interfaces. And these biospiritual interfaces is what allows it to receive the deep depths of spiritual knowledge and wisdom from its soul self. And the soul is always projecting out, meaning the essence of what you are and essence of what I am and the essence of the listener, what you are is always projecting out deeply profound spiritual wisdom and understanding. But we have to be accessing that information and that wisdom. The biological entity must be prepared to receive that information. And dependent on how we live, dependent on how we think, dependent on how we engage the world, dependent on how we perceive our relationship to the cosmos, that connection to that cosmic stream of deep metaphysical and spiritual knowledge is either going to be heightened, or it's going to be either widened, or it's going to be reduced. And for those of us who have managed to continue to widen, this is called the expansion of what? The expansion of consciousness. We are able to access more of the information. So those are the two things. One is that it's just part of the game. The biological entity that we call the human being must have the life experiences so that when we bestow the spirit levels of spiritual understanding, it can have a center to which it can perceive that information and recognize and understand that information. And then the other aspect is that there's so much manipulation that those biospiritual, what I call the biospiritual interfaces, are literally locked down, right? They begin to close. Some people call it the chakra system. Those chakra reels begin to close. Some of them begin to spin in the opposite direction that they should be spinning in. The color becomes dimmed, right? These types of things take place every single day here on the planet. And so the great challenge is to maintain our spiritual connection to our soul self. And if we can do that, there's many things that we can do. And each one of you, each one of us, there are specific things that we can do, particular that is directed by our own specific spiritual contract with the soul. There are things that we can do to open up those biospiritual interfaces. And as those biospiritual interfaces open up, we can access even more spiritual understanding and more spiritual wisdom. And because of the nature of this reality here on planet Earth, many of us over the years, our accessing of that information has been diminished. So those are, I would say, are just two of the reasons why we find the condition of the biological entity that we call human being on planet Earth in such a devolved spiritual state.
Well, that's that definitely resonates with me, definitely, because when we talk of interfacing, you've done a lot of work. We're going to get to the Borg agenda in a minute because that's some powerful work too. A lot of people have seen that. And let's talk about technology. We're living in the information age with iPods, iPads. Everything is digital. We're living in a digital universe, it seems, these days. Everyone is plugged up, plugged in, and basically on the computer 24/7. Majority of us living in busy cities, we're in a wireless sphere all the time. Really and truly, when I was reading your book, you had raised some excellent points about technology-based interfacing. And really, what do you feel about the technology and how it's really affecting people's spiritual growth
every day throughout the day? And matter of fact, right now we're using the computer, and every time I drive to the store to get some food for all these babies,
that's
I'm
right.
Using technology. And so, in that sense, technology, so long as it serves us,
right.
So long as it serves us, then wonderful. But when we become slaves to it, it becomes problematic. The other problematic, in terms of metaphysically or spiritually speaking, is what takes place when technology takes the place of our spiritual connection to our soul. And that is to say that there are people who worship their television screen and they look upon it as if it is a deity, and they put it in the middle of their living room. And they sit and they cuddle around it for hours on end in an act of service, sacrifice, and in some cases prayer. And in that sense, they are a slave to that particular technology, not to mention all the media mind control and et cetera. And I'm making that point just to say that media technology, it can serve and it can service humanity, and it always has. Well, not always, but its main intent throughout the ages, even the wheel itself was created to be in service, to allow the human species to have a much more pleasurable existence materially. So technology is supposed to function in that way. But for many of us, technology has become our enslaver. Meaning that we can't live without it. Can we live without the computer for a day? Or can we live without our iPod or iPad? Or can we take a day where we don't drive our car? And some people cannot do that, right? Some people can. I know that I can, but some people can't, and for various reasons. And in right. some cases, it's because they have been so – they have gotten to the point where they are so dependent on technology, and that level of dependency is problematic. But I'd like to read from page 85, and those who haven't read the book, this is coming from Deep in the Garden of Consciousness. You can find it on my website, linenhonor.com. On page 85, I talk about technology-based interfacing. And I read here, the reason as to why technology-based interfacing is such a problematic proposition, i.e. cybernetic implants, is that such technological interfacing disrupts the quality of the spiritual connection between the soul being and the human being. The implanting of physical technology into the human body degrades the energy field of the human being via the vibrational static emitted by the technological interface, i.e. extra low frequency waves, electromagnetic field radiation, etc. In such cases, the human being will be rendered unreceptive and unprepared to receive further spiritual insight from the soul being and can therefore be spiritually devolved towards a state of soullessness, operating on an autonomic level. And so more specifically, this is dealing with technology in terms of interfacing it with the biological human being, and that means to actually put forms of technology into the body. Now, obviously, we are seeing a trend where technology is getting closer and closer to the internal workings of the actual biological entity. You know, as a matter of fact, if you look at the internet and when we're looking at our monitors, that is technology getting closer and closer. Before it was a television screen that sat on the other side of the room. Now it's a monitor that's getting closer and closer, and now it's in your face. Before it was a phone that had a cord, and you could only hold the phone, and you have to stay there next to where the phone hub was at. But then they had wireless, and then now they have cell phones. Now they have Bluetooth. Now you get the what? Insert it into your body. You see what I'm getting at? Now what happens is as I talked about earlier, the biological entity must be adequately prepared to receive higher levels of spiritual insight from its soul being. Right. And part of being prepared is not just in terms of how it thinks, how it behaves, what it produces, what it creates, its relationship to other human beings, its relationship to the cosmos, but also the degree to which it vibrates, meaning its vibrational frequency must also be in line. If the vibrational frequency of the biological entity does not resonate or vibrate at a particular level, then it will not be able to access those higher levels of spiritual wisdom from its soul self. So therefore, if the biological entity in terms of its spiritual makeup and the vibration that it emits to the cosmos, and that vibration really functions as a receptor for the full magnitude of the spiritual information that is being broadcasted by its soul at all times. If the biological entity, the vibration that it is projecting out as a receptor, if it is diminished, then it will only be able to access a diminished amount of information. If that vibration is heightened, meaning that the vibration that we emit, our thoughts have an impact on this, what we eat has an impact on that, our relationship to other people, what we create has an impact on that, and including our interaction with technology has an impact on it, because the implanting of cybernetic technology into the biological entity, it's something that it goes against natural law. It goes against the natural principle that guides this biological entity. And therefore, in that it is in contradiction to that which is in nature, what is emitted on a spiritual level from the biological entity is decreased. It's diminished. And therefore, the biological entity is shut off from receiving a high level of spiritual insight. And so when we look at technology and this ties to the Borg agenda, part of the manipulation that is taking place here on the planet is to get people so dependent on technology that they perceive technology as being something that they must interface their very biological being with. And in essence, by interacting on this level, many people perceive this is how we will come into a level of spiritual enlightenment. There are people, as a matter of fact, and I have to say this, that the premise of the movie called Matrix and Neo, and there was some wonderful, fascinating aspects to that movie, but the premise in terms of his level of ascendancy into spiritualization and spiritual consciousness as being the one, being Siddhartha, That matter, how did he come into his level of spiritual enlightenment? He came into this level. The beginning stages took place when he interfaced with technology, and they literally programmed into his mind how to do kung fu, how to do taekwondo, how to do jiu-jitsu. In essence, he was programmed via technology. So this is part of the propagandization that somehow it is through technology that we are to experience our true humanness, that is our true humanness that stems from this concept that in order for this spiritual this biological entity to continue to evolve as a spiritual being, it must interface with technology.
Well, that's also within the book, because you cover so many things, we're not going to be able to cover the whole book, because really it would take it would take a week, probably a month, probably a year, because it's just so powerful. You talk about alchemy, and one of the most popular books apart from the Bible is a book called The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho, a very powerful book. And you wrote a story called The Coming of Cato, and you're showing the journey of a caterpillar into a butterfly. Please just talk about the metamorphosis, which is also, you know, how this story can actually relate to human beings.
That story is really right now telling the story of the human being. See, I'm so happy that you say that, because I know that there are some people who will read it. But if they put themselves in the place of Cato, if they put themselves in the place of the earth, they realize that the story itself is talking about the spiritual contract between the soul being and the biological that we call the human being. Now, this story, this is a story that I wrote back in, I think it was 2002, and it's called The Coming of Cato. And it really talks about the alchemical process of transformation that takes place. And I use the analogy of the butterfly or the caterpillar that turns and that seeks to become a butterfly. And without giving away too much of the story, because I think it's something that people really need to read, we are all caterpillars, right, in essence. Okay, I'm just using this as an analogy. As human beings, we are caterpillars, and we're subject to this physical domain. We walk upon the earth. We're subject to time. We're subject to space. We're subject to gravity. We cannot fly yet. We are subject to the spiritual laws that govern this particular universe, and in particular here on planet Earth. And so when we come into the world, we're like a caterpillar. But this caterpillar also has a dream of becoming something greater. Just like when we were children, we all had a dream of becoming something greater. And for many of us, what we dreamed of in terms of what we perceived to be possible as a child was far more grand than what we perceive to be possible now. And again, this speaks to the degree of our manipulation. Isn't this true? Right? Well, what does that say about our journey here on the planet and what we have endured to where our greatest dream has been so diminished to now we only dream in short sentences? Right. Before we would dream in novels. Now we dream in short sentences. For some of us, we dream in just a phrase. For some of us, we dream in just a few letters. But when we come here, we all have this greater dream. Mm. And what we perceive as being possible as a child is always something that is profound. The caterpillar, too, perceives when it has its dream, it dreams of becoming greater. It dreams of seeing itself become a butterfly. It dreams of seeing itself fly into the heavens, which is a symbolic representation of becoming illuminated on a spiritual level. To have spiritual illumination, this is what the caterpillar perceives, which in that spiritual illumination is reflected in it becoming a caterpillar. Now, I tell this story inside the book about this caterpillar named Cato, and how this caterpillar comes to the earth and is subject to these physical laws. But then also that this caterpillar has a dream of becoming greater, and that it hopes to become a spiritual being. And at some point, it seeks to become a butterfly, which marks its ascendancy into spiritual consciousness. This story is nothing, it's no different than the story of the human species. We are here on planet Earth. We're subject to time. We're subject to space. We're subject to gravity. Right? And as I state inside the book, consciousness itself does not exist within the biological entity. Consciousness is something that is bestowed upon the biological entity by the butterfly itself, by the dream of the butterfly, which is the soul. The dreaming of the soul is what bestows upon the biological entity the caterpillar, the spiritual consciousness and spiritual understanding and spiritual awareness. And so each one of us, we are a caterpillar roaming about in this, what I call inside the book, this small dirt field that we call the earth. And we're trying to find a
nicely put
a branch or a leaf through which we can perch our cocoon. And this is the challenge of the human species. Can we create a perch where we can or a branch or a leaf where we can perch our cocoon? That's what we're all doing here. We're trying to find that someplace. Some of us, we're trying to write it in a book. We're trying to create a book that will function as a branch or a perch where someone can perch their cocoon, or a branch or a leaf where someone can perch their cocoon. Some of us, we do radio shows like Infinite Waters, Ralph. This is the creation of a branch and a leaf where someone somewhere out there will be able to perch their cocoon. My wife and I were raising our children, and we're trying to give them everything that they can, that they will need, so that ultimately they can create a branch and a leaf where they can perch their cocoon. And so this story really speaks about that process that each one of us were engaged in. Which is, we're here, we find our struggles, and we have ours here inside of our own home, my wife and our five children. We have our struggles, and we have our challenges. But really, in essence, what we're looking for as we engage each other, and my wife and I, we create these babies and we engage the world, what we're really looking for and what we're seeking to create is a whole bunch of branches with a whole bunch of leaves where people, it doesn't matter where you're at in your life, you can find a place where you can perch your cocoon, and you can go through that metamorphosis. You can go through that alchemical process of human transformation towards a state of perfectibility. And what is that state of perfectibility? That state of perfection is spiritual consciousness, to where the biological entity transforms itself into a spiritual being and really bestows upon itself spiritual consciousness so that it can ascend like the butterfly into the heavens. That's what this wonderful journey is all about.
Well, I think, you know, that's just a snippet of the book. We don't want to give too much away, you know, but it's definitely a powerful, powerful book, really, for those that really want to question and are into questioning, because a lot of us, I feel that a lot of people are questioning more than they've questioned before, just due to the information out there. Let's move on to your latest documentary, The Borg Agenda. You know, this is really a monumental work, and it's a series. For those that don't know, The Borg Agenda, I've always been interested in film and the art of deception and the power of media. And I know a lot of your work deals with subliminal programming manipulation via the media. Star Trek, the franchise. Why did you decide to decode this?
Oh my! Well, you know, I've been decoding for and produce and in terms of producing it in video form for about 4 years now. And I will say that the television show or series that has been the closest to me throughout my life has been Star Trek. This is to say that I, excuse me, I have been,
right,
and I still am, a Star Trek fan. And I know that for some of us, you know, okay, here we're talking about consciousness, and we're talking about, you know, metaphysics, and we're talking about alchemical process of human transformation, et cetera. But then you're also a Star Trek fan. Well, how's that case? Well, it's because Star Trek, it does present some fascinating concepts as to where this human species can go. The good parts of it, at least, right? But then also, there's a lot in it that needs to be adequately analyzed and seriously criticized. So for me to choose Star Trek, it's really because I was a fan and I knew it so well that I felt like it would be something that would be quite easy. Now, what happened was that even though I thought it was going to be easy, as I began the process, I realized that in terms of the Star Trek, what it represents and what it's really telling in terms of the plot line, what I call the subliminal plot line, It was a lot more complex and, in essence, a lot more sinister than I ever could have imagined. And in that sense, I was disappointed. My level of fandom kind of diminished, right? I could still find value in Star Trek, but then I also recognized that there was a lot right. in there that was really propagandizing certain concepts. And those concepts also tie back into the degradation of the spiritual evolution of this species here on planet Earth. And so concepts like, you know, women being sex objects and sexism is a very major theme inside Star Trek. One of the foundational concepts that is presented in Star Trek, and I'm talking about the subliminal plot line, is the enslavement and the colonization of indigenous populations. And another one that is very much encoded within the Star Trek universe is the concept of race and racial superiority and racial inferiority. When I began to really get to the core of what was really being propagandized on a subliminal level in Star Trek, I was very much disappointed, but I also recognized that it was important to share this information with the world, because this is a very important point, because this ties back to the book. Much of the manipulation that I talked about, remember I talked about those two things in terms of the devolution of the species, the spiritual devolution of the species, and one being that there is a forgetting that takes place, and it's part of us allowing the biological entity to grow to a certain point where when we bestow upon it certain levels of spiritual understanding, the biological entity can receive it and understand it, and it won't overfill their cup or shatter that glass, right? So that was one. But then the other one was that there are external means of manipulating the human species to where the energy field that it projects or really what it's able to receive from its soul self is diminished, meaning it's kind of like you're shutting the door, the biospiritual interfaces are being closed down, the chakra system is being closed down, etc. That second point, when we talk about subliminal programming, this is very important for people to understand. The subconscious mind, many people perceive the subconscious mind to be the same as or something greater than consciousness itself. I just want to make this point very clear real quickly here. Consciousness does not reside here on planet Earth. Consciousness is something that is not bound by time or space or by gravity. Consciousness is infinite. Everything that takes place in nature is subject to time and space here on planet Earth, I should say, in this particular dimension, this particular dimensional reality, subject to time, subject to space, etc. Consciousness is not. That's why with your consciousness that is being broadcasted from your soul to the biological entity, you can travel to any known galaxy or any unknown galaxy, okay? You can travel to tomorrow or you can travel to yesterday because you're not subject to time, space, etc. The consciousness that exists, which is really the spirit, the depths of the spiritual knowledge, wisdom, and understanding of the soul does not exist on Earth. It's simply broadcasted to the biological entity that we call a human being. The reason why that's important is because the biological entity that we call a human being, it's an autonomic being, meaning that it is something that exists in nature. There's a supernatural and then there's a natural. The supernatural deals with the soul and other entities, etc. The natural deals with that which is here on planet Earth, that is subject to time, that is subject to space, that is subject to gravity, etc. Well, the biological entity, in essence, is no different than any other animal here on the planet. It's no different. It does the same exact things as the other animals do. The difference is that it has the capacity to connect to a higher level of spiritual wisdom that allows it to begin to perceive its human experience on a spiritual level. It can see the spiritual significance of its human experience. Now, let me tie this in here real quickly here. The subliminal programming that is being given to the biological entity is designed to impact what? Consciousness or the subconscious? It's designed to impact the subconscious. It cannot impact the conscious or consciousness because consciousness doesn't even exist here on the planet. See, this is to say that subliminal manipulation cannot impact your soul. It's impossible. Your soul's not even here. Okay? Yeah. It can, however, impact the subconscious mind. And really, the subconscious mind is the autonomic functioning of the biological entity that we call the human being. This autonomic functioning is tied to the DNA structure of the biological entity. So why is that important? Because what is taking place here is the programming of the biological component of this entity that we call the human being. And much of this programming is subliminal, meaning it's impacting the subconscious mind of the biological entity that we call the human being. And as this takes place, what happens is the programming that we get, like the programming about racial superiority, racial inferiority coming through Star Trek, it becomes a part of the mind control program of the biological entity, but then it's also encoded within the DNA structure of the biological entity that we call the human being. This is problematic. Why? Because the DNA structure of the human being is also another biospiritual interface. And as it is that biospiritual interface that we call DNA is being programmed with these degraded concepts like racial superiority and racial inferiority, it is actually operating and vibrating at a much lower frequency. And therefore, what takes place, the biological entity cannot connect to via Wi-Fi the full breadth of the spiritual wisdom that is being broadcasted by the soul being 24 hours a day. So this is to say that even when we look at something like Star Trek, there are spiritual repercussions as to the subliminal programming. And that's why I think that it's important for us to address the subliminal programming, because it's impacting the subconscious mind of the biological entity. And for many of us, we are living based upon our subconscious programming, not based upon our what? Our spiritual consciousness.
Well, you start the documentary, the latest part of the documentary, you say in the 21st century enslavement has little to do with the physical bodies and has to do with our minds. And I found that to be very on point in terms of really and truly the mind is always the prize. It's a battle for the hearts and minds of the people. Advertisements, they flood the internet. And really, there's, you know, I find that to be very powerful. And Star Trek, I'm not the biggest fan, but I do watch it. You know, I did watch it, and I did find it fascinating how far ahead of its time it was. I mean, this came out, you know, decades ago, but it seemed like the technology they had in Star Trek, it seemed like it hasn't even come out yet. Yeah. Like some of the technology that was in Star Trek, like we're seeing that's here right now. And it's like, how the hell did they know? The writers... let's talk about the writers of Star Trek. I know it was Gene Roddenberry, but a lot of even Hollywood directors, you know, a lot of people just feel that it's just entertainment. You know, you can watch Star Trek, it's just entertainment. You know, it's just there, you put on the television, and it's just all fun and games.
Oh, most definitely.
Do you feel that the writers know something that the audience don't?
These are highly intelligent people, and I would say, in general, they are highly intelligent people. And I've done my research into the writers, especially the writers of Star Trek the original and Star Trek the Next Generation. And in particular, Star Trek the Next Generation, because that is the television series that I focus on in the Borgs in the Part 7A, B, and C. And many of them are astute in terms of world history. And this is relevant because Star Trek is really telling historical events set in the future. That's really all it's telling. It's talking about colonization and the demonization of indigenous cultures and enslavement of Africans and racial superiority, racial inferiority. And all this stuff is sourced from historical events. In point of fact, episode 1 and 2 of Star Trek, The Next Generation. And Gene Roddenberry, he wrote, but he also had people who worked with him. He also had ghostwriters, etc. And one of the individuals that I looked into was an individual named D.C. Fontana, Dorothy Catherine. And what was interesting about this was when I looked into her her history, she is part of what is called the Society for Creative Anachronism. And this is a history group that that studies medieval European cultures prior to, I believe it was the 17th century. So this is to say, when you look at that particular episode and you look at what's really taking place and really Star Trek being about a colonizing vessel called the Enterprise, and the Enterprise is actually enslavement of African people. Well, that episode is really retelling the historical events that took place prior to the 17th century. Okay, so this is what I mean. Like, most Star Trek fans, they won't look into that, because ultimately what someone writes is going to be based upon what they know. And if you're part of this this society that is quite knowledgeable about world history, especially during the time period of African enslavement and colonization, etc., then that's going to come out in your writing. whatever it is that you're, you know, when you wrote your book, you're talking about things that you know about and things that you create in your mind, too, of course. Your creativity, that's an expression of it. But your wisdom and your knowledge and your understanding of history, et cetera, also is going to play a part in terms of the flow of your writing. Well, the same thing applies to these various Star Trek episodes. If you really look into who's writing, you realize that much of the information that is being presented is really sourced from their historical precedents that they're aware of. So many of these writers, and whether that's in Hollywood or what have you, whatever they're writing about, everyone must understand that they're writing about it because they are an aficionado about it. They have to, because otherwise the producers, they can just pick someone else who's more knowledgeable. And therefore, when they transmit the story and they encode it in a particular way, that the person who is more knowledgeable, who is more wise, is going to have a bigger impact on the audience as that particular production plays itself out. So this is just one example that we can use in terms of the writers of Star Trek. And this is not to say that each and every writer had ill intent. But what this shows is that particular episodes, in terms of the subliminal plot line, the knowledge of the writer in terms of historical events here on planet Earth are going to play themselves out in this spacefaring future that we call Star Trek.
Well, it certainly is so addicting, because I had a lot of friends who were also into Star Trek, and a lot of these big productions, we wonder why they spend millions. It's almost like as if they realize that they're creating another world for people to go into.
Yes.
And that, you know, that people will create inevitably. You also talk about how a lot of us, when we look at Star Trek, we just think it's a fictional out in space. But from what I'm getting from your work, you're saying that it's actually to do with the sea. Space is a representation of the sea.
And you can even use infinite waters as an example. Easy, because we can say on planet Earth, you know, water,
at a certain point,
you know, you're going to come upon some land. But if you go out into space, and that's really what it's really getting to, you know, consciousness, and it's infinite. You know, in terms of our measure of space, as biologically we call a human being, it's infinite. And Star Trek, when we look at in terms of the symbolism of Star Trek, the starship that explores strange new worlds and seeks out new life and new civilizations is really a symbolic representation of a sea ship that explores strange new worlds and seeks out new civilizations. The landmasses that the starship Enterprise finds out in space is really a symbolic representation of the landmasses that seafaring vessels here on Earth historically found, right? Landmasses here on planet Earth. So when Star Trek Enterprise goes to Jupiter, on Earth, what that represents is a seafaring ship going to France. Okay. Space is a symbolic representation of water. Right. That's all it really comes down to. And when we begin to look at Star Trek, that's, you know, and I even break down in terms of everything is really based upon a naval power structure, meaning in the Navy, you have a captain, you have a commander, you have a lieutenant, you have a lieutenant commander, all the way down to ensign. Well, this is the same power structure that you find in the Navy power structure, the military industrial complex, if you will. And there's a reason why. That's why on the Starship Enterprise, they use terms like bow and aft and the bridge. That's the main place where the captain sits, the bridge. Well, that's the same thing that we find on seafaring vessels. Star Trek is merely retelling the historical events as to seafaring vessels on Earth that were engaged in a particular enterprise, but they set it inside of the future. And what is that enterprise? The enterprise is colonization. And as an example of this, we can look at even the names, and I always look at etymology because this is one of the ingenious aspects of the writers. Not only are they abreast in terms of world history, et cetera, and they also, many of them are abreast in terms of manipulation and how to manipulate people, right? And that's one of the fascinating parts about it. but then there is also the component in terms of these writers and their awareness. I lost my train of thought. It was an important point too. Oh, I'm so sorry. I can't think of it right now.
Right.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm thinking in my mind. Go ahead. If you have another question, let me think.
It will come back. Right. Well, really and truly, you know, I just feel that it's so important to decode because, you know, I've worked in a school before and I'm just looking at how children are being taught in mainstream education, and it seems that children are only taught to accept we're not taught at a young age to question, and I feel that's why films can just manipulate us so easily, because a lot of us, we're not really taught to question. And I feel that it's just amazing, because a lot of things that you point out in your documentaries, I wouldn't have noticed, you know, because it's just, we're not even trained to even pick up on these things. To even question these things. We just take it as a given and say, oh, that's just a film.
Great. Okay. The writers, because this ties to what you just said, as we're not really trained to kind of look critically at things, right? This is part of what you talked about earlier, like the dumbing down of the human species. We're not really inspired. We're not encouraged to do that. We're kind of like brought along to like accept the official version of everything, but don't really question anything. Again, when you question everything, you will find your own truth. But what you said reminded me of the point I was going to make. In terms of etymology, writers are very abreast to etymology, because what is done oftentimes, and really most of the time, is that in the names given to particular characters inside any given television series is encoded the significance of the television series itself. Right. This is a very fascinating aspect, because if you like really look into the names of, it doesn't matter what it is. Like my wife and I, we've been watching this series called Lost, and even if you look into the names of the different characters on this series, you realize, okay, there's significance to their names too, and their name usually lines up in terms of their position and their role inside that particular television series. And I want to use two quick examples of this. One is in the original series, Lieutenant Uhura. And Uhura is the very beautiful woman, and some people classify her as being African-American woman. And she is, you know, really, she's a symbolic representation of the secretary on board of the ship. The ship is also a symbolic representation of a corporation, too. I'll give reference to that, too, in the Star Trek Decoded, the Borg agenda. Her name, Nyota Uhura, translates to, look into the etymology, it translates to freedom amongst the stars. Meaning that ultimately what she represents is a human being who happens to be African-American or black or African, who finds freedom out in the stars. Okay, well, let's ask a critical question. If she has to go out to the stars to find freedom, what does that mean? If she has to go out to the water, right, on a ship to be free, what does that mean in terms of when she's on the land? That means that she had to be enslaved. She had to be a slave in order to go off of the land or to go out into water or to go out into space and find freedom amongst the stars. So even that, I mean, we can look at the etymology. And another excellent example is Captain Kirk. His full name is James Tiberius Kirk. James means ruler. You can look at the etymology. Tiberius, we're talking about Caesar, a Caesar of Rome, meaning a ruler of Rome. And Kirk means church. Look at the etymology. So what we're really talking about is the ruler of the Roman Catholic Church, meaning the Pope. Captain Kirk represents the Pope on board the Starship Enterprise. And the Enterprise is what? The Enterprise is colonization of indigenous populations. And this is precisely why, historically speaking, if you look at the history of popes, the popes of Rome and the Vatican, they were the ones who sanctioned the enslavement of indigenous populations, more specifically, the enslavement of African people. This is why the writers of the Star Trek series, they name certain characters certain things so that there will be a subliminal resonance. And if you look into the etymology, you can therefore begin to decode what the deeper subliminal plot line is. If you know the name, what Captain Kirk really represents, every time they say Captain Kirk, what they're really saying is Pope of Rome. Every time they say Uhura, they're really saying African slave. And if you start to really look into the etymology and then follow the storyline, you realize that what's really being told, they're just talking about African enslavement, but they set it out in space, and it's right there in the names. And the writers, they know this stuff. They know this stuff. And that was the point that I forgot about. So I apologize for forgetting, but it's a very important point.
Right. Well, you know, I definitely feel that it's great that you did say that, because there's just so much to decode and so many hidden messages hidden in plain sight almost. And when you talk of spirituality, a lot of people say spirituality is no fun. You know, we just want to have a party here on planet Earth. We just want to, almost a lot of people I come into contact with, although a lot of people are like minds, but at the same time, there's also a lot of people who just really, you know, want to have a party and just really switch off, almost be in denial. But really and truly, what I'm getting at is the role of film. A lot of these films, like you have The Immortals, which just came out, they're almost creating a new mythology. So what do you feel, how important, how useful is film in creating history, recreating history or mythology? Because when I look at a film like The Immortals, they spend millions of dollars on these films. Yes.
Well, it's
so stunning. You watch it. It's almost like that really did happen.
Yes.
You can't even... It did happen in people's minds, you know.
Yeah, no, and it does.
So why do you feel that... Yeah,
you know, please I talk about this side of the book, that reality... I mean, there are infinite realities that are playing themselves out, and even realities that we create inside of our mind exist somewhere. Now, the difference is, you know, do you turn yourself off and allow someone to program your reality that exists inside your mind? Or do you approach the creation of your reality based upon your consciousness? See, the greatest party is the party that we engage in, where we bestow upon this biological entity spiritual guidance and spiritual consciousness. That's the greatest party. That's when you're really having a good time, okay? Chucking down a few drinks and listening to some music or going to watch movies and just kind of like entertainment value, it's a perception, right? That's just a perception that somehow we're enjoying ourselves. It's a quick fix, right? It's a perception that we're enjoying ourselves.
Quick fix.
But the truth of the matter is that in terms of the programming that we get, and I haven't seen Immortals, but when we talk about mythology, there's been so many films that have, and there's some films like The Lord of the Rings, right? That created a mythology in and of itself, right? That's huge, right? And there are people,
right,
in terms of
right.
when they engage that particular film, and even the book, that became real to them. And if it exists inside your mind, that it's a reality
right.
somewhere. It's like dreams. When we dream, that is actually a reality being formulated somewhere. Sometimes that reality is based upon our human experiences. Sometimes that reality is something that's otherworldly. When we wake up, we don't realize, like, what was that all about? But really, that was the creation of a new reality stream somewhere in all of existence. Well, the same thing applies to movies. When people sit down and watch these movies, especially if you're not critical of them, what you get from the movie is not conscious. What you're getting from the movie is that which is being applied to your subconscious mind. And in some cases, the programming is new mythology for you to believe in. In some cases, it's new ideas and concepts such as racial superiority and racial inferiority. And in many cases, it's about the demonization of indigenous cultures. In some cases, it's about perceiving women to be nothing more than sex objects. This is a reality that is being created literally in people's minds, in the subconscious mind. And my, you know, for my orientation, there's nothing joyful about that, about being programmed by an external force and you're not being, and it's unconscious programming, because ultimately your reality is being molded and constructed by something external of what you are. And that's not a party, ladies and gentlemen, okay? That's a right. nightmare. The party is when,
right.
and the truly gifted dream and the greater dreaming is when it is our consciousness that creates our reality. And again, as I stated before, earlier on, there's a difference between the consciousness and the subconscious. There's a difference between what we call to be conscious and being unconscious or the subconscious mind. And part of what I try to get to inside of the book, and this ties to the same thing applies when we look at the media manipulation, because that's that second aspect in terms of why the species is degradation. For many of us, we sit back as a form of entertainment and we think that we're enjoying it and we think it's a party. But really what's taking place is our reality is literally being programmed, and it's being programmed for the degradation of the spiritual degradation of the human species, not for the spiritual uplift. So we got to be clear about the difference between the two. It's interesting because what one man may perceive to be a party, another man may perceive to be a nightmare.
Well, I think that's what, you know, I think that's what your work really does, Leonard. Really and truly, it opens up my mind just to realize, and I'm sure a lot of other people's, to realize that
yes,
there are, we're living in a multi-dimensional universe. And for so long, just through the educational system, we're not trained, like you said, to question. We're not trained to really realize that we're not the only entities on this planet.
Mm.
And like George Lucas said, Star Wars. You know, what does Star Wars mean?
Yes.
That's such a powerful film title because it just shows you that, you know, who knows how many galaxies are at war for whatever reason.
And that's another
Star Wars is such a, I love that title. But
people, you say, you say Darth Vader, and there's people who will get chills.
Right.
I might get one myself.
Obi-Wan Kenobi. Right, right. But, you know, it's just amazing. And let's talk about, there's a great author I've had on my show a couple of times called Jason Kafis, and he says that human beings have gone from organisms to mechanisms. And when we talk of linear time, a lot of us, we're waiting for 2012, which is only a couple of months away. And this has been a big, big theme. A lot of people say it's related to the Mayan calendar, and everyone is waiting to ascend in a spaceship.
Yes.
Some people say the world is going to end. How do you feel linear time impacts
the autonomic programming that exists here on planet Earth? And again, the biological entity itself, as an animal, is subject to linear time. However, linear time is not spiritual. It is not conscious. Consciousness is not dictated or is not subject to time itself. Consciousness, spirituality, the soul is not subject to it. So the idea is that part of the spiritual contract is to engage the biological entity so that it can transcend its autonomic functionings. Okay, just like the writer says that the human being has been turned into a mechanism. Yes, a mechanism. We're talking about an autonomic being. Like a robot, right? This is the degradation of the human species. I'm sorry, what was the question? Oh, yeah, yeah, in 2012.
Well,
yes,
no,
yes,
I'm just saying, how do you feel linear time impacts us?
Yes. Right.
You know, everyone, we're always waiting for a date, you know, a doomsday date, and just even time in general, just like the calendars. You know, everyone, there was a film called, I think, In Time with Justin Timberlake. And that's a very interesting film because it's in a world where money doesn't exist, only time does. And essentially people are buying things with time. You know, it's a fantastic film, I have to say, because
And,
it just seems what's going
on
right now.
Says,
people
I
don't
have
time.
I always have enough time, right? And I've seen at least I think the first hour and maybe 20 minutes of that movie. We didn't get to see the end time. I think it's a remake of a movie that came out a long time ago too. But yeah, getting back to time in 2012 and how people are waiting. Part of this is individuals identifying as being exclusively the biological entity that we call a human being. And when we do that, we begin to wait for some magnificent event to take place. We don't put in the work. If you identify as a biological entity, you are going to be subject to nature. And nature functions to maintain itself as is in a state of balance. That's what nature does. It maintains itself in a state of balance. And for the biological entity, that's part of the autonomic functioning. And that's wonderful. It has its place. The Great Earth Mother intended that to have its place, but the Great Earth Mother also intended for her children that we call the biological entity, that we call human being, to also experience a level of spiritualization for their sake, but also for her sake as well. This spiritualization transcends the concept of time, and it stems from what? Bestowing spiritual consciousness onto the biological entity that we call human being. So the concept of a date bringing forth spiritual illumination is erroneous because our spiritual consciousness is erroneous because consciousness is not subject to time. So how can a date bring forth something that is not subject to it? It's an impossibility, right? It's simply not possible. So for many of us, time becomes a mechanism wherein we sit and wait. And in point of fact, many of us get to a point in our lives where instead of actively engaging in a process, a creative process of actually changing our internal workings, our internal mechanism, instead we become complacent. We want to be entertained. We want to have a perceived party and simply go along with the genetic program, if you will.
the autonomic functioning of the biological entity. However, in doing that, we do not bring forth a level of spiritual enlightenment to the planet. What we do is we maintain nature as is. And time in and of itself, there's nothing wrong with that, because to perceive time as a calculation of the movements of that which is in nature is perfectly fine. That's part of the program. That's great. That's part of the, that's what. But when time becomes something that controls people, when it becomes something that enslaves even those who perceive themselves to have come into a level of spiritual enlightenment, well, if you're waiting on 2012, you are subjugating your own spiritual enlightenment to four digits on a page. I mean, we.
Right.
And that's
the
right.
Time begin stop, right? 2012
so
years ago.
See, and that's what I mean. The consciousness is unlimited. The biological entity that we call human being,
right,
it has
right.
its limitations. And we have to recognize that and honor that. But we all can also transcend particular limitations based upon our orientation. And for those who identify as a biological entity that we call human being, in terms of spiritual growth, it becomes necessary to look to something. In some cases, the 2012, I have this saying, time always tells the truth. So for those of us who are so inclined to engage time as just a linear experience, for those of us who perceive it that way, well, that's fine. You can do that. It's very limiting. But then also recognize that time will always tell the truth. And in 2013, if you haven't ascended somewhere, if you haven't gotten into a spaceship to go someplace, right, through this concept of spiritual ascension, then you have to ask the critical question. How did I buy into this illusion?
Right.
And for many of us, we bought into the illusion via the subliminal programming that impacted the autonomic functioning, the mechanism, this biological entity that's been turned into a mechanism. We have bought into so many different illusions. Time will tell the truth. And those illusions came from the programming of our subconscious mind, the autonomic functioning. See, the difference is, and I want people to understand it, and when you read the book, it'll become more clear. The difference is that the biological entity in and of itself, it is an autonomic being. It breeds on its own. It will eat on its own. It will sleep on its own. It will do everything that that any other animal here on the planet will do. It's subject to the natural laws that govern this universe. This is perfectly fine. If you identify beyond the biological entity itself and recognize that you are a soul being that has manifested throughout the cosmos and through multi-dimensions and throughout multiple creation streams, then you lay claim to a magnitude of power, and you recognize
right.
that your spiritual contract is to bestow upon that biological entity that is functioning autonomically, to bestow upon it the means to it, which it can transcend its nature, its autonomic nature, and come into its supernaturalness. See, that's what this experience is about in terms of the spiritualization of this species. And one of the things that happens is when we get so caught up into time, it's almost like a blockage for many of us, because we cannot tap into the infinite if we are trapped by time. I got to say that again. We cannot tap into the infinite, which is what you are, if we are trapped by the workings of time.
Powerful, brother, powerful. And this is Infinite Waters diving deep. Really, as we wind down, I want to just say, please take a look at the book, Deep in the Garden of Consciousness. And you can find that at www.lennononfilms.com. All the information is on the site. And it's a powerful book. I'm not just saying this because Lennon's here. I'm saying this because it's a book which has definitely made me question a few things, made me really look deeper into my own programming, because I feel that
yes, we are.
Everyone is still under mind control. To some extent, that's why you're on planet Earth. You know, this is Earth school. This
I
call it a life-versity. University. You know, life, this is just a school. You know, everyone is enrolling in different courses. So it's definitely a powerful, powerful book. And the Borg Agenda, the new part, I believe it can be found on your website, www.lennononhonor.com.
Lennononhonor.com. On Friday, I will be premiering Part 7C, so people can really look forward to that one.
Well, brother, as we're winding down, I just want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. Because time is currency. Time is precious. To dive with us once again. And it's really been an honor. No pun intended. But really, I feel that you've been with us you know, from the early days. And I hope you'll continue to dive with us in the future as well. But please just take some time just to tell anyone out there, everyone out there, about upcoming events and what you have going on in the upcoming days, months, years.
Actually, in 2012, I already have it launched now, but in 2012, my new website, linenhonor.com, I'll be having premium content that will be there. And I'll have a forum up, too, as well, where people can actually begin to conversate on the forum. I've had them before, but this one's going to be specifically for linenhonor.com. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to be doing more Borkins in the segments next year. And I have plans of writing a book of quotes that will probably be out maybe towards the middle of next year. But my main focus, of course, is linenhonor.com. I have articles that are listed there. I have my document, or some of my documentaries are listed there. I also have my books and my music, my information about consultations as well. You know, it's a lot of wonderful things coming up in 2012. And I want everyone to please take the time to head on over to linenhonor.com when you have some time. Here we go again, talking about time. And dive on in, because there's a lot there to begin to digest. And I'm also going to be doing begin to do podcasts on I think I have three different shows that I'm going to be doing podcasting. So that's another thing that I'll be looking forward to. And if you don't mind, I'd like to just read from my book. It may take about just maybe 30 seconds, if you don't mind. I want to read this just to close out. And for those of y'all who have the book, you can turn to page 88. And this is the message that I have really been focusing in on bringing to the planet. And it's dealing with cosmic respectability. And it'll just take just a minute here. If the human being continues in its process of spiritual growth, then the collective energy field created on Earth will be that much more spiritually evolved. Consequently, the positive energy field created by the human being functions as the frequency change needed for the Great Earth Mother to continue in her own process of spiritual growth, which therefore contributes to the overall spiritual growth of the Milky Way galaxy organism. When the biological entity that we call the human being functions to this capacity, it will then return to its place of cosmic respectability. And I want each and every one of you who are listening to this to recognize that the goal is not to become more spiritual, because in essence, that's what you are. The goal is to come back to a place of cosmic respectability. And how we do that is by providing this biological entity, this wonderful biological entity, with the spiritual insights and the spiritual awareness and the spiritual wisdom that will enable it to become a more spiritually gifted being. And then when it becomes that spiritually gifted being, it will contribute to the Great Earth Mother's spiritual growth. And as the Great Earth Mother continues in her spiritual growth, the cosmic organism continues in its spiritual growth. And I want to leave everyone with that. And again, brother, thank you so much for allowing me to dive deep here on your wonderful show. I appreciate it.
Well, definitely. Well, I feel that the work you're doing is phenomenal, fantastic, and keep doing what you're doing. Because I feel that, of course, even like me and other people doing this kind of work, there's always challenges. But at the same time, I feel that the benefits outweigh, because I'm sure you have a lot of people who are resonating with what you're saying. And I always say this, that all you need is one person. Sometimes I think with this social media world we're living in, people think the more people that connect with me, the better it is. Sometimes all you need is one person, because you could have just saved someone's life. You know, I'm sure you've had people writing to you. And sometimes I feel that's what we should always remember. It's not about how many people you have who are following you. It's just about how much you can, if you just impact one person, then you've done your job.
It's about the quality of the relationships, not necessarily the quantity. And I can say that I have some wonderfully blessed relationships, including you,
some very quality relationships and some very supportive relationships. And I want to thank you for all of the hard work. And I know many times, it can be very challenging, and other people may not necessarily, and even people who are benefiting from what you do with your radio show, they may not necessarily recognize your challenges. But just know that you are touching people, and you are helping other people like myself to touch people and to impact people in a positive way. So I offer you my highest level of respect, and then also my highest level of encouragement to continue to be a place where people can come and be comfortable and share information that is impacting the world in a positive way. I really do appreciate you, brother.
Oh, thank you, thank you. I mean, we're not going to stop here on Infinite Waters. We can't. <right. laughs> Once you're in the water, there's nowhere else to go. You know? But likewise, I congratulations to the child and the family. Much love to Aida as well. And much love to you, brother. And stay diving into Infinite Waters. And to everyone out there, continue to dive deep into Infinite Waters. Continue to question, because once you question, like you said, Leonard, we will discover our own truth. And just like the master teacher, Dr. Mm-hmm. Delbert Blair, said, there's no truth until you decide what the truth is. And I feel that's so powerful, such a powerful statement as well. But we're going to wrap it up.
Thank you,
brother. Thank you once again, and have a blessed day. Okay, many blessings. And to everyone, continue to dive into Infinite Waters. We'll be back for another show. Peace.
Infinite Waters Radio.